get any of them.
It's on.
Oh.
I think it works.
Okay.
Should be.
B-B-E-T-T.
Might be a bad idea in some ways.
Ruth Ann Bowers, B-O-W-E-R-S.
Is Ruth Ann one word?
Two.
Okay. A-N?
A-N-N.
B-O-W-E-R-S.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gloria.
G-O-R-I-A.
Brittingham. T-T-I-N-G.
Ladies and gentlemen, can you all hear me? Can you all hear me now? Can you hear me now? I know we're supposed to start right at noon, but there's an attorney coming down from Wilmington, and he called here, and he said apparently he's right at the exit, and he'll be here any minute, so we're going to hopefully wait just a couple minutes for him to get here. I've been asked by the town staff if you have not signed in. There's, an attendance sheet going around. If you haven't signed in, it's at the table by the door. If you have not signed in, please do so. Thank you.
Everybody jumps up.
Thank you. Owen.
Rich. How you doing?
I don't know. Thank you.
Don't need any. I'd like to go ahead and call the meeting to order at 12:05. What I'd like to do is have everyone introduce themselves on the panel so you know who's here, starting on this end.
My name is Ethel Watson.
My name is Anna Trebet.
My name is Cummings Evans.
My name's Alvin Atkinson.
I'm Terry J. Work, the town attorney.
I'm Ruth Ann Bowers.
I'm Gloria Brittingham.
Now, my understanding is that the election board has 7 members, and we're missing 1 member. And
Marie Reed, who had a doctor's appointment and couldn't make it.
She may be here before we're done, but as everybody can appreciate, I'm sure people in the audience are probably taking time off from their jobs, and I know members of the election board are, so we're going to try to move right on. Let me just first say, for everybody, to step back just a minute and take a little bit of pride in the fact that we live in a country where people can come to an election place and have these kinds of discussions, that we have open and free elections. I think that's very important. The other thing I want to say by way of introduction is that I know that sometimes emotions run high. People get very caught up in their campaigns on both sides. Again, I'd ask everybody just to step back, take a deep breath, and let's just try to get through this like civilized people. By way of background, and this is just kind of to set the stage, it's my understanding, because I wasn't here, but the election board apparently met on Tuesday evening, April the 12th, to be sworn in and get themselves organized to conduct the election. And somewhat unexpectedly, they were confronted with a letter from 3 of the people that are running for office in this election that's purporting to challenge over 60 absentee ballots. And there were approximately 5 different grounds, or a lot of different challenges to different ballots, but there were basically 5 different grounds or categories of challenges. From what I understand, again, the election board apparently accepted the letter, and we have a copy of it. I believe each member of the election board has a copy of the letter. They listened to comments from the public for approximately half an hour. My understanding is that most of the people in the room that evening were people supporting the letter of challenges, and there was no one in the room who was on the other side of the issue, if you will. And that, not having anticipated that anything like that was going to occur at their organizational meeting, the election board was simply unprepared to respond. And either during the meeting or at the close of the meeting, the chairman indicated that because these issues were new to him, that he was going to contact me as the town attorney and try to give them some guidance. So he did contact me, and I can tell you that I spent the better part of the last 2 days trying to research the law and acquaint myself with the facts. I will tell you, and make this disclaimer right up front, that election law is not my specialty. I'm not affiliated. I'm a registered on one part or the other, but I'm not involved in politics. I'm not associated with any party on a regular basis, so I don't really have any specialty or background in election law. And frankly, in my 25-plus years being a municipal law attorney, this is really the first municipal town election where we've had a contest or a challenge. So I've been on a pretty sharp learning curve myself, and I hope that I can have gotten the answers right and can provide the election board some guidance. The first thing I think that it's important to note is that under the town charter, the elections are under the supervision of the election board. So this is not the town council that's running the show right here. This is the election board that's going to make the decisions with regard to these, to how the election is conducted and with regard to the challenges. And as I've indicated, the chairman has asked me to provide them with some legal advice, and that's really the purpose of this meeting. Now, let me just pause here for a minute and say that this is a public meeting of the election board. This is not a public hearing, and there is a difference. A public hearing is where the public is invited to come in and get up and voice their opinions and expression and so on. That's not the case. Under the Freedom of Information Act, all public bodies, with some limited exceptions, have to conduct their meetings in open, in the public. And that's what we're doing here. Now, having said that, the election board feels it's very important that they get as much information and educate themselves as much as possible before they make a decision here. So, after discussing this with the chairman, what we do want to do is to allow what I'm going to call a representative of a group on any side of the issue to address the board today before they talk to me and hear from me, or however we proceed from there. So I'm assuming, I know for a fact there's a Mr. Forston here who's going to be speaking on behalf of, I believe, the mayor to set forth his position. I would assume I see Mr. Mullen and Mr. Dr. Chavanak here. And I'm sorry, Mr. Max, I've never met you. Mr. Max, I see the three candidates are here. They may want to speak, and I want to ask if you wouldn't mind, since you all on the same letter, that just one of you address the board rather than all three of you. And then if there's somebody else who I've missed here that legitimately represents some type of group or organization that would have, say, a different perspective than either the mayor or the challengers, that they identify themselves now, and we'll try to give them an opportunity to speak as well. But again, this is not going to be a meeting where everybody's going to get a chance to address the board. It's just going to take too much time. It probably is not going to contribute anything to the discussion that we're not going to hear from the representatives themselves. Now, after the Board of Elections has heard from the representatives of the interested parties, at that time they're going to hear from me. I have written a legal memorandum. I consider it at this point to be a confidential attorney-client communication between myself and the members of the election board. At some point, they may decide that they wanted to make that public. That's up to them. But that's a privilege that they can waive or not. I don't think they're going to have time to read it today. But when I speak, whether I speak in public or whether I speak in executive session, I hopefully am going to encapsulize and summarize the content of that memorandum in a very brief fashion. So at some point in the meeting, the election board is going to make a decision whether or not it wants to have me discuss this in public or whether they want to meet with me privately. I do want to emphasize that if the election board does decide to go into executive session, that the sole purpose of that executive session will be to hear my legal opinion, receive my legal advice, ask me questions about it. I will not permit the election board to have a freewheeling discussion on the merits and then come out here and then simply announce the decision. They will have their discussion on the merits out here, any votes, any decisions we made out here in front of the public. Now, one last thing, and I think this is an important point to make, and I direct this to the members of the election board, and that is this: my role here. As everybody knows, I'm the town attorney for the town of Smyrna, and in that capacity, I'm routinely called upon to give legal advice to a number of different departments. I give legal advice to the town council. I am in daily communication with the town manager. I talk to the police chief. He asks for my advice. We give legal opinions to the Board of Adjustment, the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Building Department, and so on. In this particular case, I'm giving advice to the Elections Board. It's simply not necessary, in my opinion, nor is it practical or economically feasible for every department and every board to have their own separate attorney. And as I said, at this time, I'm representing the election board. And however, I do emphasize the fact, or make this point to the board, that I still continue to act as the town attorney for the town council. And in fact, next Monday night, I'm going to be attending a town council meeting and discussing other business. I'm not going to be discussing this issue, but I will be discussing other business. I also need to point out to the board that the town council, by majority vote, has the right to fire me at any time. A majority vote. Three members of the town council are candidates in this election. One member of the town council, I think it's pretty common knowledge, is probably opposed to the incumbents, and he's on the town council. So I don't know how that plays into your considerations. But I guess the point is that a majority of the town council is not involved in this dispute right now. It's three, maybe four, but they're on opposite sides. I guess you could say it's a 3-1 split. Nevertheless, the point I want to make here is if the election board believes that I cannot exercise independent judgment in this matter, not colored by the fact that I also represent the town council, then I think you should consider asking the town manager to hire independent legal counsel to give you advice, if you have any reservations about that. Now, having said that, I think there are some problems with that. One is simply the shortness of time. I think it would have been possible for you to get independent legal counsel to be here today. I think there's only, 12 days till the election? So that's a very short time frame. And I think the other problem is that I don't think there are that many attorneys out there, frankly, that have any specialty or expertise in election law unless they're pretty actively involved with either the Democratic or Republican Party. The guys that do this area of law, that's what they do. That's why they have the expertise. And although this is a local town election, I think there are some undercurrents of Democrat versus Republican. And, you know, I'm not sure you're going to be able to go out there and find an attorney with expertise who, you know, isn't working or connected with one party or the other. But that's, you know, that's your call. But anyway, those are my comments about, the situation I'm in. One of the things to say you may wish to do before you adjourn today is say, Mr. Jaywick, we appreciate your efforts, but, you know, we think that we should ask the town manager to try to get somebody else who, you know, has no connection with the town. And I want to assure you that if you do that, I will not in any way be offended. But, you know, again, that's your decision. So with that, I'd like to proceed, which basically is and what the chairman wants to do, and according to the agenda, is to hear from the representatives or the attorneys of interested parties. As I said, I think I have correctly identified two, if you say, factions or representatives. One is the, I'll call it the Mullen Group, because that's the candidate for mayor on that side, and then Mayor Schaefer on the other side. And I believe Mayor Schaefer has an attorney here to speak for him. Is there anybody else that would, you know, legitimately represent a totally different viewpoint from these two factions or represent some other legitimate group? Yes, ma'am. Well, ma'am,
how these people were registered.
Okay, let me interrupt you if I could, and I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, that's
what I would like to suggest is the first item of business we're going to try to deal with today is the issue of the absentee ballots and the challenges. And after we get through that, maybe we will hear your concerns under other business. Okay, but let's go ahead and move on with this. I have not heard. There's basically two factions. The fact that the challengers had the floor on Tuesday evening, I think it's appropriate to let the mayor's attorney go first, then we'll allow Mr. Mullen and his group to speak, and then if there's a rebuttal, and then a surrebuttal. So everybody's going to get a fair chance to speak. Again, I hope the comments won't go too long. We're going to try to get out of here by 1 o'clock, but do the best we can. Okay. This is Mr. Richard Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Jaywick, members of the board. Is this where you want me to stand?
Okay.
I first learned of the difficulties or the issues of these absentee ballots yesterday, and as a result, I just haven't had time to prepare any kind of formal memorandum or letter to the board. So I'm going to just read essentially a statement and read some language from some cases, if that's all right with you. The first point I want to make here, I think, is simply that And let me qualify all this by giving a little background about myself. Mr. J. Work mentioned there are attorneys who work one side of the aisle, Republicans, or the other side of the aisle, Democrats. I am also in another life counsel for the Republican Party, so I do have a little bit of experience in these kind of issues. I will tell you that Delaware as a whole, I'm happy to say, does not have a lot of experience in these kind of challenges, and I think that's a testament, generally speaking, to our state. But the first point I want to make is that I believe the timing of these complaints is somewhat premature here. And by that I mean, as a matter of election law, if you want to contest the vote of a voter or claim that the voter is not properly casting a vote, that challenge is made at the time of the election at the polling place. And for example, we don't know of the challenges that have been made to the absentee ballot requests, how many of those absentee ballots ultimately will be returned to the town. It's just premature. Those challenges, if any, should be made the night of the election. That's what I believe Delaware law calls for. So I just think we are a little premature at this time. But more important than that, I want to talk about the nature of the challenge that has been made and put some of this in context, because there's an important principle here that I think really matters, and which really goes to protecting the voters. And at the end of the day, you know, it's their votes that matter. And that is simply this. Where a governmental body takes an action and citizens rely on that action, the government is then not free to simply turn around and say, gotcha, sorry. If people rely on what the government does in good faith, then they're allowed to continue. It's called equitable estoppel, is the name of the legal doctrine. And to give you an example of how that works, there is a case in Delaware that brings that up in an election context. I'm not very good at names, but the name of the case is Mirzahali versus Shagnon. It's a case involving election of officers for the Delaware Association of Professional Engineers, which by statute controls or licenses professional engineers in the state of Delaware. They had an election coming up, and they had bylaws that govern that election, and the officials of the organization told all the potential candidates, you had until a certain day in which to file for that election. And some of the potential candidates sent in their petitions or certificates or applications before the date they were told. But as it turns out, they were told the wrong date. And in fact, the applications came in after the date set forth in the bylaws for candidates to notify the association of their candidacy. The Court of Chancery said those folks relied upon what they were told. They didn't know that the deadline was earlier. I'm going to allow them to be candidates. And so the principle of equitable estoppel, which is really basic fairness, applied, and those candidates were allowed to run. And by analogy, what the town has done here for many of these challenged absentee ballots is the same thing. It got applications for those ballots, which some now say were incomplete because they left off a phone number. A phone number, incidentally, which you only call if there's a problem otherwise. But you don't need to call it if there's no problem. Or it left off the reason for requesting the absentee ballot. Technical mistakes. But the town nevertheless sent out the absentee ballot to those folks. And to the extent that that was done, and those absentee ballots were received by the voters, the town now can't turn around and refuse to count those absentee votes. It is equitably estopped. And I think we'd all agree that that's basic fairness. If I get an absentee ballot back from the town and send it in, how do I know that I made a mistake when I made my request unless the town tells me? The time for that telling is when the absentee ballot request is made. Since the voter got the ballot and sent it in, I believe the town is equitably estopped. Now, one of the other challenges that's been made to these ballots is they weren't necessarily handed out by the right people to the voters. And there's been some, what I believe, unfair insinuations made as part of that. I'm not going to get into those. I think they were unfair. That's all I'm going to say. But the point is, if the voter got their absentee ballot, he doesn't know that the town charter says it's got to be the town manager who hands or delivers it to him. All he knows is he got his absentee ballot. And if he sends it in and he's signed it and had it properly sealed and whatnot, and the town receives it, again, I don't think the town can fairly say, well, the wrong person delivered it to you, and so therefore we're not going to count your vote. They didn't know that. If they'd known that, they might have called the town and said, hey, can you get the right person to bring me the ballot? It's simply too late in the day for the town to complain about that. And along those lines, let me point out that all we've had is a complaint that the wrong person handed out the ballot. No one has come forward, and I haven't seen any evidence. And I need to caution you here. I've only kind of gotten to know these facts over the last day and a half. But as I understand it, no one's come forward and said, the ballot wasn't delivered to me by whoever was supposed to deliver it. So there's been no showing whatsoever that these ballots were not properly delivered to the people who were supposed to receive them. And in the absence of that, I believe that you have to accept the ballots. You know, if someone came forward and said, I never got my ballot, and the absentee ballot for that person later showed up at the town, that would be a much, much, much different case. But that's not our case here. Again, the town has been acting and voters have been relying, and that's what matters. And I cited, and I sent a copy earlier today of the Mirzahali case to Terry Jaywerk, because I understood he was the attorney for the board. Now, as I said, there's not a lot of case law in Delaware challenging absentee ballots. In fact, I'm not sure there's any. But these challenges have been made in other states, and the general principles are the same no matter what state you go to. So I just want to spend a minute or two just reading you what other courts have said, and then I'll be happy to answer any questions, and then I'll sit down. In a case from the state of Florida, where they seem to have a lot of election challenges, this is a case from 1976, though. It's Boardman v. Estiva. I will send a copy of this case to Mr. Jaywerk later this afternoon. I apologize, I didn't have a copy for him in advance. But the first thing the court says is, we first take note that the real parties in interest here, not in the legal sense, but in realistic terms, are the voters. They are possessed of the ultimate interest, and it is they whom we must give primary consideration. I think we all can agree on that. But again, it's notable that that's the first thing the court says in this challenge. And this was a challenge to absentee ballots. The court then went on to say that notably existent in this dispute is the complete absence of any allegation of fraud, gross negligence, or even the hint of intentional wrongdoing, either on the part of the voters or of the election officials. I think that's our case exactly here. I mean, I think that while people may question whether it looks right or something, I mean, I don't think anybody here intentionally violated the law. And if somebody wants to make that allegation, they better have the facts and the evidence to back it up. The fact that the mayor himself may have delivered ballots is not evidence, at least in my mind, of intentional wrongdoing, because the town didn't have to give him those ballots to hand out if the town didn't want to. The court went on to say that the Florida legislature has prescribed statutory requirements which are intended to ensure that those who vote are qualified and registered to vote, and that they do so in a proper manner. There is no magic in statutory requirements. If they are complied with, to the extent that the duly responsible election officials can ascertain that the electors whose votes are being canvassed or counted are qualified and registered to vote, and that they do so in a proper manner, then who can be heard to complain that the statute has not been literally and absolutely complied with? Strict compliance is not some sacred formula, nothing short of which can guarantee the purity of the ballot. So that was a case from Florida. There's also a case from Texas, Fugate v. Johnston, in which the court said the burden on the contestant is more than that of alleging irregularities. The irregularities must be such as, if proved, would void the votes. Departure from directory provisions of the absentee voting law does not result in the nullification of the votes so long as the qualified voter's will is expressed. Again, the point is, if these ballots have come in and you know they're from the people, you should count them. The last case I want to read from is a case from Indiana. And let me just get the name of the case here. Brown v. Grzelwick from the Supreme Court of Indiana. Again, the court upheld the challenged absentee votes. The court said, it has been held that ignorance, inadvertence, mistake, or even intentional wrongdoing, or the performance by an election official of his duty in a mistaken manner will not disenfranchise. Point is, if the voter doesn't do something wrong, the fact that the election official may have made some sort of technical mistake or may not have strictly followed the law is not going to disenfranchise that voter. And I think that's what is also applicable here. The court went on to say, and I'm just going to have to read this because I thought the language was fun. Unless this country has recently undergone a revolution that has escaped our notice, a voter can be lawfully deprived of his suffrage or a popular election can rightfully be quashed for only a few causes, namely fraud or corruption, intimidation or violence, or such gross irregularity as renders the ascertainment of the will of the individual or of a majority impossible. And that's not what's happened here at all. There's been no fraud. There's been no corruption. There's been no intimidation. There's been no violence. There's been no gross irregularity. The town got the requests and sent out absentee ballots. In some cases, it mailed them out. In some cases, officials of the town delivered them. But there's been no showing, none, not even an allegation that those absentee ballots weren't properly delivered. And unless and until someone can bring forth a voter who didn't get an absentee ballot, or unless and until someone can show fraud or corruption or even make a real allegation, I just don't think that the challenges that have been made stand up to any kind of scrutiny whatsoever. Now, let me qualify that in one instance, because I think this was a mistake on the part of at least some people. The town charter does require that you be a U.S. citizen in order to vote. I mean, that's what it says right in the charter. And I believe, in fact, that on the absentee ballot request form, there's even a box that you check whether you're a U.S. citizen or not. So if people checked that they were not a U.S. citizen but got sent an absentee ballot, I don't think anybody here would question but that they should not be entitled to vote because they weren't entitled to vote to begin with. But I think that's a very small subset of the ballots that have been called into question here. And so with that, I will end my remarks. I will make a suggestion, if I might, kind of out of pragmatism, perhaps. There still is 11 days, by my count, to the election. And to the extent that the town or this board wants to direct the town to go back and see if they can contact people who turned in incomplete forms, either they're missing the phone number or they're missing the reason for why they're not going to be here, to me that probably isn't a bad idea. There's not a lot of names on the list, and certainly never hurts anybody to double-check things like that. I suspect you will not be able to contact everybody. I suspect there's probably at least a few people who may have left for long vacations and you're not going to be able to reach them. But certainly we would have no objection, and I think it would be prudent for the town to try to contact these voters just to make sure that they have all the information that the form requires. But with respect to those voters who the town does not reach or cannot reach, I believe the challenges are not properly made until election night. And the night of the election, I would suggest the board ought to make clear that it's going to require more than some sort of procedural defect, because all the cases that I've just read to you, and I'll supply copies to the board's attorney, all of those cases say it takes more than something, more than a mere technical defect in order to render a voter's vote invalid. And that's especially true in a case here where these voters got their votes in reliance on the town. They don't know they've done anything wrong. And so far as they know, they've cast votes that are going to be counted, and this town should count those votes. With that, I'll happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'll just sit down and be quiet.
Does anyone have any questions? Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forson. We're going to hear now from Mr. Mullen, I guess, or whoever you designate, and then if you have a chance, if you have something you want to respond to, then you'll be welcome to do that. Mr. Mullen?
The from what I understand, the main focus of this meeting is to ensure that the registered voters that appear on the challenge list have the opportunity to have their vote counted. We are not challenging that that right. What we are challenging are the procedures used to provide that ballot to the town. The legal issue of how they were obtained and the process is going to be addressed by council and other venues, and we're not going to get into that. We pretty much stand by our challenge, our statement. The fact that we made it early, prior to the election day, gives this board the opportunity to check out every voter, find out. Our main concern is the way the applications, the way the requests were filled out, there is not an opportunity to positively identify the voter. That is our main concern, and that's what we want this board to address. We're not contesting the vote, the actual ballot. We are contesting the way they were requested, the way they were handed out, and the way the town received them. The citizens of the United States that are on this list should definitely be contacted. They should be given every opportunity to reapply for a ballot and be given a applicable ballot that should be handed in and counted on election day. Obviously, the non-U.S. Citizens did not have the right to vote in this election in the first place. They call into question the entire absentee ballot list that we have here. And we started this early to give the board the opportunity, to give the board the time. There's only 12 or 13 days before the election. We thought we were doing the right thing. I can't cite case law because I don't have any with me. But hopefully this board will make a ruling on what the actual challenge of the actual ballots rather than the legal issue of how they were obtained. As I said before, that's going to be handled in another venue, and I don't think needs to be addressed here. Thank you.
Was there a rebuttal that you wanted to make?
Well, before, yeah, is there any questions right now?
Any questions,
Mr.
Mullen? Gene?
Okay. Mr. Mullen, I have a question, and I'm sorry. I'm not getting this thing. You're saying that you're not challenging the ballots themselves, but you're challenging the way that they were handed out.
The town charter is very specific, and the ordinance is changing the way the absentee ballots are requested and received. It's very, very specific. There isn't a gray area. It's pretty much in black and white. The ordinances say that the application will be handed out either by hand or mail by the manager of the town. That's not a gray area. There's no mention of anyone else. receives that request, provides the voter with the ballot. After he receives that request, he's able to check the rolls to make sure it is a valid voter, and then he either hands or mails the ballot to the voter. That's not great verification, but it's a lot more verification than what actually happened.
Okay, but wouldn't it follow that if the board were to agree with you, that wouldn't that mean that the ballot should be rejected?
Based on the way it was done, yes, the ballot should be rejected, but we have a problem. These are legal registered voters that have the right to vote. The fact, and through no fault of their own, the fact that the procedure wasn't done correctly, this board needs to decide whether or not they're going to give them an opportunity to have a valid vote.
So to some extent, you wouldn't disagree, I think, with what I heard Mr. Mullen say, not Mullen, I'm sorry, Mr. Foster, say that given the time that's left, he would think it would be a good idea for the board or the town to contact these people. You would agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yes, I would.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Foster?
Did you have anything you wanted to say in response?
I'll just refer the board, and I understand Mr. Mullen doesn't have cases and isn't a lawyer, but the town charter says what it says, but what the case law tells you, the Delaware case that I faxed to you earlier and the other case that I read from, even though the statute may direct the town to do something or follow a certain procedure, the fact that the town did not follow those procedures doesn't matter, or the voter got the ballot and relied on how he got the ballot and cast his vote. And so, as I said and as I suggested, we're more than happy if the town were to go back and try to contact voters. But I think we can all agree that it's highly unlikely that all of those challenged voters are going to be reached. As I said, some may already be away on vacation. Some simply aren't around during business hours during the day, and you're just not going to be able to reach them. So we're still going to be left with a problem, most likely, and hopefully it'll be a very small number, of ballots where they've been received and yet they were not hand-delivered by the town manager or mailed by the town manager. They may have been mailed by another employee of the town. They may have been delivered by one of the candidates in this election. That doesn't mean that they weren't received, and it doesn't mean they shouldn't be counted. Because, as the case law says, those kind of technical deficiencies don't matter. What matters is the vote. And those ballots at the end of the day should be counted, absent a real allegation of fraud or misconduct. And there hadn't been any allegation like that. There's been a lot of insinuation, and it sounds to me like a little mudslinging. But there hasn't been any showing of that at all here. The fact that the mayor may have been the one who handed out ballots to people doesn't mean that those people didn't then fill them out properly, sign them, and send them back. And I think it's unfair to suggest otherwise. But now I've rambled on too long. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Mullen?
The fact that the town charter and it let I'm gonna the fact that the town charter specifically addresses how the ballots will be handed out, and case law seems to go against that. Exactly what good is a charter? We have already made the decision as a town in the charter that this is the way this is going to be conducted. And if other states and other venues have decided that they're not going to conduct it in that manner, it really has no bearing on what we do. We already have a charter. It's very specific. It's very clear. It wasn't done that way. And we're not making out allegations. We're not mudslinging. All we want is the procedures to be followed. That's it. That's all we want is the procedures to be followed in this election so we can have a fair election Everybody has a fair opportunity to vote, in that everybody's vote counts. That's what we're challenging. We want every vote to count. We would be more than happy to assist in any way, but this board needs to contact the absentee ballot voters, and they need to get the requests and the applications signed and verify they are who they are and get them ballots. That's all we're asking. In any criminal investigation I have ever been involved in, and I've been involved in a few, the evidence person takes the evidence into his control, and that's where it remains. And this is kind of like that. Somebody has taken these ballots into their control. I know if you walk into a court and you're the evidence tech and you cannot positively prove that whatever you're presenting to the court remained in your control for the entire time, the evidence is thrown out because it's tainted. And this is the case that we have here. We're not alleging any wrongdoing. We're merely saying these ballots are tainted and they need to be replaced with valid ballots.
Any more questions or comments from the election board?
Any other questions? No. Okay. I want to thank both speakers for addressing us and giving us additional information. Now I'd like to address the board. All right. In talking with the attorney, I mean, we're at the point now where we need to make a decision as to whether to go to executive session. I see both pros and cons to that. I want to express those prior to us going into executive session. All right. The pro to that is that if you are nervous to ask specific questions, that's probably a good way to handle it. But again, we can't make any decisions or discuss options during the executive session. All right, it's just to get information. The con to that is that the public doesn't hear what goes on in the executive session. All right. Either way, it's fine by us. So I'd like to put out, is there a motion to go into executive session at this point? Just the board and the attorney. Just the board members and the attorney. Yes. Okay, do I have that motion? In absence of that motion, we're going to remain here.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have, like Rich, I've had a limited amount of time to try to get up to speed on these issues, but I have spent most of the past 2 days doing that, and I will try to give you the benefit of what I think. First of all, as I've already said, I think it's the election board that's driving the bus here. The election is under your supervision. I agree with Mr. Faustin that the time to hear challenges is not today. The time to hear and decide challenges is very clearly under Section 26-58A and 26-65A of the town ordinance on the day of the election. And I would point out that the town ordinance is modeled somewhat under the state statute, and the state statute at 15 Delaware Code Section 5515 basically has the same procedure, that if you're in a state election and absentee ballots come in, they're held by the election department in the carrier envelope, and then they are sent to the district polling place on the day of the election, and then after the polls open on the day of the election, the carrier envelope is opened and the voucher envelope is then taken out and the name is announced for challenge at that time. So that's when the challenges really have to be decided. And I think to that extent I agree that if we're sitting here today saying that, you know, we're going to decide these challenges today, it is premature and it would be inappropriate to do that. The third point I want to make is that I think there are two primary competing considerations that the board has to consider. The first is that there is a policy, and I think everybody in this room, including Mr. Mullen and the challengers and the mayor himself, would agree that it is important to try to protect the right of citizens to express their vote at the ballot box, and that every effort should be made to do that. And in fact, I mean, part of the problem we're confronted with today was an effort by the town council within the past year, and I think the gentleman is in the audience right there. The town council received a concern that the requirement of the notary was quite a problem for people that are, you know, sickly or housebound to try to get a notary there. And so the town council, looking to, again, to the state statute, did away with the requirement that the person casting an absentee ballot sign that in front of a notary. You know, if that was still a requirement, we probably wouldn't even be here today. But at the time, it seemed like a good idea to the town council, and that's what they did. Be that as it may, that's one consideration, as I say, to try to make sure that everybody has the chance to express their ballot and not to lightly disenfranchise anybody because of some technical difficulty with their ballot. On the other hand, another significant consideration that the board has to consider is to maintain the integrity of the election process so that the true will of the electorate is carried out. And that's those two things kind of go hand in hand. You can't give more weight one to the other. Now, it's clear to me, as I said, if you read through the letter dated April the 12th, although there are a lot of different ballots, when you cull through that, there are basically five different challenges. One is that the application form was not signed. And if you read the ordinance, it does. That is one of the requirements of the ordinance. It says the application form shall be signed. A second ground is that on some of these ballots or the applications, I want to be very clear, make the distinction, on some of these applications for an absentee ballot, the applicant did not fill in the reason why he could not appear at the polling place on the day of the election. And that also is a requirement. If you read through the town absentee voting ordinance, that is a requirement of the ordinance. The third challenge, if you will, the category, I should say, is that on some of these applications, and again, I'm talking about the applications, not the ballots, there was no telephone number, and I'm going to assume no address, where the voter could be reached on the day of the election if there is a challenge. And again, if you compare this to the state statute, and the site is 15 Delaware Code 5503B, basically what this section of the code says and what the state statute says is that the absentee voter on his voucher envelope, and in this case we say it in the application form, needs to provide a telephone number where that person can be reached in the event of a challenge on the election day. So if somebody's vote is being challenged, the election board can pick up the phone, call the person up, and try to get something straightened out. And in this case, the telephone number was missing on some of these applications. The fourth category is that a number of these absentee ballot packages, because when I say package, there's like three envelopes, there's the ballot itself, and there's a set of instructions. So I'm going to call it the absentee ballot package. That was not handed or mailed to the voter by the town manager, but rather by a candidate in the election. And it, again, Mr. Mullen is correct. If you read through the language of the ordinance, that's what it says. It says that the ballot package shall be handed or mailed by the town manager. And the fifth category is that some of these individuals are not U.S. citizens, and I think everybody recognizes that is a requirement of the charter, and if you're not a U.S. citizen, you shouldn't be allowed to vote in the election anyway under the charter. Now, as Mr. Foster has indicated, the courts are extremely reluctant to overturn elections. There is a strong presumption in the case law that ballots facially valid, they appear to be facially valid, should be accepted as valid, and that the burden is on the challenger to have a ballot rejected, and they must show some compelling reason. They just can't come in and simply make an allegation. They've got to come in and make some proof positive sufficient to convince you that you need to reject this ballot. Now, some of the legal issues that are involved, which I've identified and have already been discussed, one is the question about equitable estoppel, and that is basically the doctrine that's already been explained, that any errors by the town staff in accepting an incomplete application or in allowing absentee ballots to be delivered to the candidate or by a candidate rather than by the town staff should not allow the election board to reject an otherwise facially legitimate ballot that's been submitted by a voter who relied upon the staff giving him that that absentee ballot package, at least unless the challenger can show that there's actual fraud. And I think that's what Mr. Foster has indicated. You know, at least at this point, there have been allegations that maybe it, you know, it didn't look right, it might not have been done right, created an opportunity. But so far, at least, no one is able to come forward and say, you know, how did that ballot get in there? Because I never got it, you know. There's been no showing of actual fraud. Now, a second issue, and to me, this is where, based on my research, I think the meat of the issue is whether these provisions in the town ordinance are called mandatory or directory. And those are kind of legal terms. But basically, mandatory means, as Mr. Mullen would argue, that it says it in the ordinance, and therefore, it's if you don't do it, that's it. There's no further, you don't need to go any further to discuss it. If there was simply noncompliance with what the ordinance says, that's a dead issue. It's the end of the story. Directory means that it's simply telling you this is how you should do something, but if you don't do it, it's not necessarily fatal that you didn't do it. You know, it's a requirement, but it's not fatal. Now, based on my research, and there's about five or six cases, and I'm not going to cite the cases, but I'll tell you the kind of the meat of the cases. Some of the main points, that there is no universal standard or test, you know, for whether a particular code or section of a code is mandatory or directory. That the second point, that the overriding concern is the intent of the legislature, or in this case, the town council. What did the town council intend to happen if there was noncompliance with this particular provision in the ordinance? The cases say that if the statute requires certain things to be done and also tells you what's going to happen if you don't do them, that that is a mandatory provision. Okay? So the ordinance says that if you don't give a telephone number, the ordinance, the ballot shall be rejected. That's pretty clear. You can't argue with that. But if it simply says you shall give a phone number, then it's not necessarily mandatory. Where a statute requires certain acts but does not specify a forfeiture, in other words, the penalty for failure to comply, then it does not automatically follow that failure to comply with that provision will render whatever was supposed to be done void. The next point, the primary criteria is whether the requirement is essential to preserve the interest of the electorate. Whether the requirement in the ordinance is essential to preserve the interest of the electorate. Next point. Generally, the courts hold that when an ordinance uses the term shall, you shall do this, the town manager shall issue, shall mail or whatever, generally that will imply a mandatory intent, that it's something you have to do. But the mere use of the word shall does not control if the statutory context suggests to the contrary. So, you got to read. You can't just say, oh, it says shall, so therefore it's absolutely mandatory. You have to look at the whole thing in context. Now, the courts have also indicated that, as I've said, I think I said this previously, that these things are decided on a case-by-case basis. Remember, there's no universal standard or rule. In making the determination, the intent of the legislature is controlling, and you've got to try to figure out what the town council intended. Points that you would need to consider: the particular language involved, the subject matter of the ordinance, and you don't need to take notes because this is in the written memorandum, the purpose for which the statute was enacted, the importance of the statute and the provision, the relation of that provision to the general object of the ordinance, and then the consequences of a contrary construction. In other words, what will happen if I interpret it this way versus what is going to be the result if I interpret it that way. Those are things that you're going to have to consider. Now, those are things that really we're going to have to deal with on election day. Maybe I won't be, maybe you'll have another attorney, but whoever, this board's going to have to deal with those issues on election day, because I don't think that now is the time to make those decisions. It's been pointed out here that it's very premature. I spoke with somebody in the town hall this morning. James indicated that as we speak here today, that less than 20 absentee ballots have actually been received. We don't know whose they are because they come in a carrier envelope, and the carrier envelope has not been opened. But we got 66 in play or at issue, if you will, and yet only 20 have come back. The other 44 never come back, they're never filed, then we're only dealing with 20. As was discussed here today, that there may be some way to cure some of those. We may be down to, you know, a handful of ballots at the end of this. So this, although it's an important issue, and I'm not trying to make light of it, this whole thing may come down to, you know, a real issue over only a handful of ballots.
Can we ask questions? Or?
Well, let me finish. Well, actually, no, go ahead. Ask questions.
All right. I do agree in reading the town code that the official challenge cannot happen until election day. It specifically states in there, and we understand that. And part of the reason why we discussed and agreed to executive session is the desire of any and all parties, it sounds like, to try to see if putting forth an effort to correct this before it even becomes a challenge is worth both the town's effort and a recommendation from this board. It sounds to me as if both, excuse me, I can't remember Schaefer's attorney's name now,
Foster.
Mr. Foster, and even a letter from Mullen, both indicated that their primary concerns were for the rights of the voters. My question to you is, at this point, if we as a board were to recommend that the town take actions to contact each one of these, and we were even to take, let's say, 60 down to 5, chances of somebody winning by less than five votes becomes a much smaller problem for us. So why, I mean, is it outside of our legal rights to actually request that to happen?
Now, as a matter of fact, you stole my thunder, because my next point is that
okay.
That I think that I see nothing wrong, and I agree that what the election board should do is to instruct the town manager to attempt to contact all the people on the list. The town manager tell these people that at this point it appears that their absentee ballot will be challenged on election day, and state tell them what the grounds for that challenge will be, and then that the town manager would allow those people the opportunity to cure that defect. And, you know, if it's a question that somebody didn't sign their application form, didn't give a reason on their application form, didn't sign their application form, it'd be a simple matter for these people to come in or mail back in, you know, a form properly filled out. It could be stapled to the one they originally filed, and that would take care of a lot of those issues. If it's a question, if the nature of the challenge is such that, you know, this was not delivered to this person by a member of the town staff, you know, if that person calls up or comes in or writes a letter and says, well, you know, I don't care, Mayor Schaefer gave it to me and I'm the one who, you know, I voted it and I mailed it back, you know, I think, you know, Mr. Mullen would agree. Even Mr. Mullen, who raised the challenge, would say, you know, that as long as we've got that, you know, that in our pocket, we know that the person actually voted their own vote, you know, that vote should be counted. I think that procedure would not disenfranchise anybody. I think it would be just the reverse and go a long way towards making sure that a lot of these ballots that otherwise conceivably could be rejected on election day, depending on what your vote is, will be allowed to vote. To try to make the point, if we assume for the sake of argument, just to make my point, that there was a typographical error on these absentee ballots that were sent out and somebody's name, you know, didn't appear, and we discovered that after 66 ballots went out, I don't think anybody in this room would disagree that the town staff should do everything they could to try to correct that problem before the, you know, before the election. And in many ways, I see this the same way. There have been, at least there have allegedly been some mistakes made in the way things were done. We have the opportunity to cure some of those, and I think that that would be a good way for the election board to go. I do want to emphasize that if the election board takes this action, that there's nobody leave this room, you know, that this is a determination or ruling that these ballots, you know, are rejected or have been rejected. You know, that, again, will be decided on election day, and if there are any ballots out there that are still under challenge. This is simply trying to cure the problem and at least get the problem down as small as we can before election day. And the last recommendation I'm going to make to the board, and hopefully, you know, knock on wood, all these ballots get straightened out and there's no issue on election day, but to the extent that there is a challenge to any absentee ballots that come in, the ordinance already says that if you reject a ballot, you're supposed to put that aside and save it, and save the voucher envelope. What I'm also going to suggest to you is that if, after hearing the challenge, the vote, and again it's a majority vote of this board, is to accept that ballot, that you take that. We have a separate ballot box for those challenge ballots that are accepted over the challenge. We put them aside because the reason for that is that it's entirely possible or probable that the spread, no matter which way the election goes, will be such that the ballots at issue won't make any difference. But if the election is that close that 5 or 10 of these challenge ballots could have changed the outcome of the election, at least then we'll have them in a separate box. So if there is any type of judicial review of the fact that you kept those ballots and the court says, no, they should have been accepted, we don't have to throw out the whole election. Okay? Because that's one possibility. Is the court, if the court can't look at the final result and say that this is a true expression of the electorate because the challenge ballots got mixed in with all the other ballots and we don't know which ones were which and the margin was only 2 votes, there's a real possibility the court would have to say, sorry, town, you got to go through the whole election process again. So that I would make that recommendation. So I don't think I really have anything else to add. If anybody has any questions of the board for me, I'll be happy to answer them.
Any other member of the board want to ask any questions? Not at this point.
I just got here from the doctor's office.
Gloria,
good timing.
No. Do we have any recommendations from the board? I'd like to hear any opinions. Please.
I feel that we should contact as many of these absentee voters as we can.
I think that we should make every effort to make sure every one of these voters are qualified. And then their vote, we contact the ones that we can possibly contact, but the votes all be put there for the election night and be counted. And then at that time, if there's a challenge with the ones that are left, then we'll have to deal with it at that time.
Opinions here?
I agree with that, yes. To deal with the situation as they occur. The ballots, though, absentee ballots usually counted after regular election, right? Mm-hmm. And there has to be a severity right there if it's mm-hmm. place of a close election. Absentee ballots is a big thing. So we let that be consideration how valuable they are pertaining to the overall count of the election.
And how about having the town contact the
Oh, I go, yes, definitely. Yes. Give them a chance so they can make a correction.
Okay. Anna and Ethel?
I mean, the same thing. I believe counted and given a chance to be counted.
So all votes are very important.
That's important to them, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then can I have a recommendation to a motion to have the town contact all those challenged voters?
Make a motion that the town contact all the challenged voters.
Can I have a second, please?
I'll second that motion.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, for clarification of the motion, I understand it to mean to contact each of the persons that were challenged, in telling them that their vote will be challenged on Election Day and stating the particular grounds because the letters are very specific.
Exactly.
And then offering them an opportunity to contact the town manager's office to
right.
see if something
Verify.
Could be.
Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
But is it clear that if we cannot contact some of these voters, if they're out of town or whatever, that their vote will be still counted and then challenged at that time if there is a problem?
We as a board can't guarantee that they'll be counted. We have to, at the time of the election, based on the code, we have to determine the validity of the challenge at that point and make a decision there.
Right. It'd be challenged
yes,
there.
Correct.
What will happen
if separately.
Yes.
Right. What will happen at that election is we open up the carrier envelope, and let's assume that it's one of the ones that was originally challenged, but now the person has come in and cured that. Well, then we say, okay, that one's no longer challenged. We open up the next carrier envelope.
Right.
That person has never been able to respond back to the town. You're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have
right.
to listen to the challenge and make the decision.
Right.
Call for a vote for that motion, yay or nay?
Yay.
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 Yes. Okay. Unanimous.
Okay. I think that brings us down to item 4, vote on how to proceed with the election based upon the input and discussion. We've just done that, so now we're down to other board business.
Yeah, copy of that.
May I just raise a question
Yes.
The town is prepared to do whatever you've instructed and on behalf of the town staff. I apologize for any discomfort, inconvenience, or whatever that resulted in this meeting. I do need to ask you to be very clear. Those ballots are being challenged because they were delivered by somebody else than the town staff. It is your instruction that it goes to that voter, ask them to fill out a new application, to give them a new ballot package, and void the one that they previously received.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong, okay? Here's how I think it should be handled. The letter is very specific in the types of challenges. So if it's one that says, you know, that there's no challenge that it was not a town staff, it's just a question of they didn't sign it, they didn't telephone number, that I think you just get them to sign a new application and staple to the old one. Okay. The ones, any challenge, any ballot that's been challenged because it was not delivered by a member of the town council, I think possibly the simplest way to handle that, and I'm open to any suggestions, is simply to get a statement from the person. Contact and say, it's been, you know, there's been a challenge, there's been an irregularity here in the way that you got this absentee ballot delivered to you. Now, I personally think that if the person attests to the fact that, you know, I don't care if it, you know, came to me by the mayor, came to me by the town manager, fell off a bus, I marked the ballot and I sent it back, that's my ballot. If they are willing to attest to that, I think that nobody should have a challenge with that, have an issue with that ballot. Maybe I'm wrong, but at any rate, that should satisfy it. So I think what I recommend, rather than having them remark ballots and go through all kinds of, you know, machinations to get this done, is simply get a statement from them, preferably in writing, but at least talk to the person so you know who you're dealing with and get them to confirm that, yes, I mailed my ballot in.
Can I suggest an additional thing, if that's the approach we're going to take, is to not only do that, but we have the ability to send a notary with them so we could have it notarized?
Mr. Hugger, what I understand you to say is you're as an administrative person, you're a little worried with having to deal with verbal communications. You want something in writing.
I don't intend to deal with any verbal communications.
I think that's reasonable.
Sign a document or a new form.
Don't blame you. What I'd like to do at this point is take his information and ask the board to again make a motion and us vote on it, because it sounds to me like we have two options here. One is to come up with a letter written by the attorney, sending it out, having them sign it saying that they weren't coerced, and if they were coerced that they would fill out a new ballot and so forth. The other option is to send them a complete ballot package and require them to fill out a new ballot package. Okay? Do I have a motion on either one of those?
I make a motion that we just send the verification, the letter, and not a new ballot pack.
Do I have a second on that?
I second the motion.
Second the motion. Could I have a vote? Yay or nay, please?
Yay.
Yeah. Over here? Yay or nay?
No. Okay, you satisfied, Mr. Chuck?
Okay, now I do have another question, which I presume you're going to get to next, is the question of those people who are being challenged as whether they're citizens or not. So I'll wait until you make that decision.
Well, the people that are being challenged, I think they should be notified that there are going to be challenged for that grounds, and then it's incumbent upon them if they can demonstrate that they have U.S. citizenship and they want to produce that, you know, before the election. That should take that should resolve that issue.
If they're willing to sign a statement that says I am a U.S. citizen, is that sufficient, or do I need some kind of other proof? Again, I'm also interested in making sure that nobody who's entitled to vote gets challenged on election night. If we can correct all of these or most of these, then I certainly will do whatever it takes, whether it's daytime, nighttime, weekend, or whatever, we're prepared to do it.
Ford, I had contacted Joyce Wright, because at the meeting that we had Tuesday, one of the members of the audience suggested I do so. I had called her, and of course she had said that when the applications came into the board to sign them up for as a registered voter of the state, that they were rejected at that time.
So these people would not be on our voter list.
So what I would recommend, if that's the case, is to contact the Kent County Commission of Elections and to find out which ones from the town of Smyrna were actually rejected because of citizenship. That makes it easy for us.
Well, there is one problem, and I think Mr. Hugman may be getting here to address this. We basically have a little bit of a bifurcated system in Smyrna. If you are registered with the state, you have to be a U.S. citizen to be registered with the state, and therefore, you know, we presume your citizenship. However, some people are not registered to vote in the state, but nevertheless, they can still register to vote in the town of Smyrna. And so there.
But again, if we know that some were rejected, can we get that information from the board? Rejected on the basis of citizenship? Because if that information is available, it should be available for us as a board, right?
To the extent that they're registered with the state, but if they're not registered with the state at all. Let me ask this lady a question, because you had the point about the citizenship.
Yeah, you already said that if they are not registered with the state because they are not U.S. citizens, and that's fine. But they did, some of these immigrants that they were permanent residents, they are not U.S. citizens, but they came to the town, and I picked up some of those forms, and I do have one of those forms here that there is no question on there that you must be U.S. citizen in order to be, to be able to vote for the town. And here also it says that town of Smyrna registration of voters, and it has a number. And at the bottom it says, note, this does not register this voter with the state or federal election. That means assuming that you can vote locally, but not for the state and federal. So that's why these non-U.S. citizens in the town of Smyrna, they were registered and received the absentee ballot. And that's what I believe the whole thing came about, you know, what you're here, you know, discussing things. So that is a legitimate question that, you know, they are not, if they are not on the state elections list, then obviously they are not U.S. citizens, but they are on the town's
right.
List.
And
you are registered legitimately. Right. They put this application in, you guys register them, and then send them absentee ballots. So what?
Let me try to respond. I think, first of all, the fact that they were registered with the town in the first place was a mistake. The questionnaire, the registration process should have screened those people out right at the beginning. You know, there should have been something that required, and I think that's being done now. I think that was brought up by one of the council members within the past couple of weeks, and now an effort is being made to ask that question. But you're right. There are some people that actually did get registered in good faith, not realizing that they had to be a U.S. citizen, only thinking they had to be residents, and they apparently got absentee ballots in error. That doesn't change the fact that the charter controls. The charter says you have to be a U.S. citizen. So estoppel aside, that they're not going to be able to vote. I think
that's
we all agree on that.
That is no problem. We don't have any question. I can go through that list. Some of them I do know, some I don't. I mean, you are welcome to call them and then see. They are not there. It's not their fault that they are. Those non-U.S. citizens or their permanent legal immigrant here in Smyrna being contacted by one lone councilman, his name is Patrick Cahill, and tell them that if you go and vote, your citizenship is going to be in jeopardy. And these people, that they are not fluent in English, that's those kind of words, illegal, citizenship, those are the first few words that they learn when they come, because they are very the law-abiding citizens, I mean residents in here. So they don't want to hear. And another question is that if Mr. Cahill, he contacted these people, was assigned to do that, because I talked to him, he just took this responsibility upon himself to just do without even consulting the board member or the council members. The rest of them are not with him. And he calls and says, I'm calling from the town of Smyrna, so you are registered, you illegally registered, don't you go and vote because your citizenship is going to be in jeopardy. I mean, and also, vote for this person, and specifically, he told me that who to vote for. Okay. So that is, I mean, I could have had him arrested, but I didn't want to do that, so really.
You should.
Yeah. So, well. So that is not right. You know, I'm not in each side of these candidates. I haven't seen Mr. Bowen and my door. Mr. Schiffer did knock at my door, and some of these non-immigrants, and they asked him to bring me a form, or well, how do I get a form? There is nothing to do here. But the thing is, I'm here for these non-citizens that because their names are on this dispute list, there shouldn't be anything that it jeopardize or damage their status or second-class residents of Smyrna. They wanted to be part of the government of Smyrna. They are working. They are paying taxes. They wanted to be involved. But the thing is, to be contacted, that is a misconduct right there. That to be contacted without even approval of the council, do it all by himself. I mean, that's not right. So they are scared. That's why they called me. That somebody called me, and then this is the number. You know, this is, and one of those people that was contacted, he just left. Zoya Baki, he just said that my English is not very well, or whatever, how he put it on the paper, you know? And he said, this is not right. I want, as you said, that the town made a mistake to register them, and the town can send him a letter, just saying, simple, we made a mistake, we apologize, or even don't say we apologize, we made a mistake. You're not U.S. citizen, therefore you cannot vote. We didn't know. It's always the perception in Smyrna that locally you can vote, and this is your form that it doesn't say anything. You must be a U.S. citizen to be able to vote. How can we assume? And they receive also the absentee ballot. So I'm just here to. I'm not in each candidate side, but I'm here to just.
I understand in the interest of time. I think that the recommendation that we've already put forth would solve that issue too. If we send letters to everyone stating the challenge reasons and have them either confirm or deny that challenge, would solve that issue also.
Yeah, well, let me ask this, and I wanted to ask you this question. I have no idea, and Mr. Mullen, you're the one who raised the challenge. What kind of proof we require? I mean, is a simple statement that I am a U.S. citizen going to suffice, or going to ask for some sort of formal proof? And how hard is that?
I'll be glad to just look at your list. The people who I know that they are not U.S. citizens, I just cross in right there and make your life easier just by crossing their name, and they are not going to have any question. And they don't want to hear from the councilman Cahill again to be harassed or intimidated.
I don't think you need to worry about that. I do think, and I appreciate your attempt to make things simpler, but I really think...
I'll bring those people, however you want me.
That's fine. I think that we need to hear from those people themselves, whether it's they do it in writing or they come in or whatever.
That's fine. That's not easy, but that's no problem.
Ultimately, it's the duty of the town to verify that the voters in their election meet all the requirements of the charter.
Some people are being led to think that they have the right to vote, and if they vote, they can be deported.
I think we're all on the same page. We're trying to find the most expeditious and appropriate way to allow these people. If these people indicate that they come forward and say, I'm not a U.S. citizen, then we're not going to challenge the fact that they're saying I'm not a U.S. citizen. The question is, if there's anybody left on that list who still says, yes, I am a U.S. citizen, but they are still being challenged as not being a U.S. citizen, what proofs is the town going to require? Well, this lady's suggesting, I would think, that the individual may have the citizenship papers themselves.
For those who are a naturalized citizen. For Ronnie Smith, he is a U.S. citizen, you all know, so you don't have to challenge him to bring your citizenship because he doesn't have a paper.
Right.
Aisha Smith has a U.S. citizenship, you know,
paper. Let me also make the point here. We've got a list of some names, but, I mean, there may be people in this room who are not registered with the state. And why should we single these people out and say, you know, I mean, I don't know that Dave Hug is a U.S. citizen. I've never seen his papers. So
I don't have any papers.
So I think that we...
Are you a
right. So I think we're all in agreement. We are going to... You will help us. We'll contact the people. Anybody that wants to say, I agree, I'm not a U.S. citizen, we will get that resolved. Anybody that's still on the list after that, then we're going to have to figure out what type of...
What do you think?
I think you're right. I don't know what.
Yep.
One more question.
Okay.
I wanted to, after I received the call or talked to News Journal and also Mr. I just didn't know what to do because I was scared that what is this? He's just calling these people. I made a call to the town officer and the manager. I assumed that you were the town manager. I left a message and you never responded.
I think really, again, I don't mean to cut you off, but
yeah.
I think we've addressed the issue, and you've made your point, and I think that we don't need to dwell on it.
To make sure that to correct the fact it doesn't exacerbate the problem.
Mm-hmm. But how many? Well, I guess Mr. Mullen, my understanding is about 66 ballots that issue.
66 challenged.
66 challenged.
As of the 12th now.
Right.
I don't know if there's any more that came in since.
So it's not an extremely inordinate number. And as I say, based upon the procedures that have been approved here, that hopefully by Election Day, that number will be significantly reduced. And keep in mind also that even though we're talking about 66 ballot packages that went out, less than 20 have even come back. So the ones that come back may not even be subject to challenge. I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but we're way past the time.
Just to clarify, these ballots were not challenged for any other reason other than a procedural error. That was the only reason they were challenged.
As the attorney did bring out, Mr. Mullen, challenges at this point may be very premature. We're talking about a process for getting the ballots out.
Right.
Your charter says one thing, and it seemed like there was a contradiction to the charter. But the legal president, I think, would take
the problem with challenging the ballot at the election or during the day of the election. It gives no recourse to the voter. If the rules are broken and he got the ballot, even if he is a legal voter, the board would have no choice but to discount his vote, and we did not want that to happen. We wanted every single legal person that could vote in this election to vote to have their vote counted.
But you wouldn't want
that's
to.
Why we presented the challenges early, so this problem could be cleared up.
But in presenting your challenges early to absentee voters, those that are not, that can't be reached, would be denied the right to vote.
Let's move forward at this point because we have a recommendation for that the town's going to contact those being challenged. And I think, again, that's in the interest of the voters, which it sounds like all parties are very, very for taking care of the interests of the voters, and we need to move on to the next business. Is there any other business for the committee?
As registered voters, what guarantee do we have that this is all the ballots that are out and that more won't be delivered by a candidate? What guarantee do we have that my vote won't be canceled out by an illegal?
I can assure you that when this issue was raised the other night, from that moment forward, I personally restricted the distribution of all applications and all ballots, and they are being done in exact accordance with the code. They are not a complete application. They're being sent back to the person. In fact, we're making the effort, we made the effort yesterday to go out and try and find that person. These are not even people being challenged, just to make sure that they get in the right form. And we are not sending them a ballot until we have that form. And we are personally, as in James and I, primarily James, putting that ballot in the mail or hand-delivering it to the voter.
Is the phone number one of the requirements on that application?
Phone number is required.
Okay. What if you have a person who is poor who does not have a thank you?
Okay.
Is the ballot being cast out because that's not a requirement?
If that application says does not have a phone, then that is fine. There are people who are in institutions who are otherwise entitled to vote who do not have a phone in their own name.
And what percentage of those ballots that are being challenged are minorities?
I have no way to know. Okay. Nor do I care. That's something I need to be involved.
That's what I'm asking.
A voter is a voter.
Obviously, they are looking at seeing all the immigrant names. It's pretty evident that you cannot
can
tell that.
Tell what all you nationality
can.
Do you have
That's audience discussion. Let's move to board business, if we could. Were there any other topics that we need to handle? There was one for me. There was a topic brought up with the validity of the addresses. And in their last meeting, James says that he was going to send someone back out to verify street numbers and things of that nature. How have we progressed on that topic?
Relying on planning and zoning to tell me if they're in or out. I mean, there's only so much that we can say that they're definitely in or they're definitely out of town limits.
And at the...
We're doing our best that we could do.
And just as discussed in the last meeting, we as board, all we can do is go by the town maps.
That's exactly
with these streets.
Correct.
Okay.
Or right. The Sunnyside Bakers. That Sunnyside Road, they're not town limits, and right. They're getting letters from candidates to vote for.
Outside the town's control, where they're getting
letters. Is there?
The town is only concerned with confirming that you live in the town's fund.
Were there any other topics that need to be addressed?
Any other business for the board?
Any other business?
Bruce? Just two comments. I say here a lot of times when I come to town, council meetings, I could be accused of partisan politics, so I waited after the meeting to say this. First off, Aisha, I know very well. She works with me down the House of Representatives. I'm going to be the first to say that it is true those immigrants were not to blame. They're clearly not to blame. They either were hoodwinked or they were misinformed. They were not to blame. And I realized, and I told her that day, I submitted the town charter of the state representatives from Smyrna, along with Senator Vaughn. Clearly in that charter, in section 551, as stated by both councilors, you must be a U.S. citizen to vote in the town election. That's the first thing I want to say. Second thing, one reason I'm hearing that maybe this group submitted this complaint to start with is that rumors have been going around by some candidates that there, in fact, will be no challenge. There'll be no person inside that department elections to challenge anybody. So this was the only opportunity they had to make a challenge. Sounds like what I'm hearing tonight, that there will be an opportunity for challenge if there is a need. But clearly, Rachel and I both agree that the Democrats were not to blame. It was clearly misunderstood or somebody that hoodwinked somebody.
Thank you. Any other business?
Mr. Chair, before you ask for a motion to adjourn, I'd just like to say that I'm frankly very proud of the citizens of the town. You had a very controversial issue. I thought it was well discussed, and the points were advanced very well, and did a very good job as citizens. Thank you.
Okay. May I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Yay
or nay?
Yay.
Yay.
Good job.
I was nervous.
You did a great job.
I was so nervous. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
You're welcome.
Terry Jader.
Hello, how are you?
That's why I called
him.
It doesn't say there's any penalty.
I think it's not over absentee ballots. I think it's the way.
That's what I think.
Okay. And
I agree. It was done inappropriately, but it's not the voters. It's not the voters' fault. That's what we need to be. Dean, thanks for being patient with us. We appreciate that, sir.
I'm going to think somebody's in it.
Like I say, we are non-professional citizens. Don't know how to run these meetings. And
so,
yes, we're volunteers. Oh, he has.
That's all we have to do.
This is all most of us like. But this wasn't putting in a lot of stuff.
I'm just a citizen, and all I thought we were doing is helping with the election. That's all.
I'm the man now
with the
hell. Yeah. Boy, look, what'd you do to get him in that suit?
Hey. It was all his idea.
It was all his idea.
I need a chew.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Well, good. Did he say
Oh, please do. Yes. Yes. I think we need people.
You say Lord.
Thank you, sir.
Good job.
Thank you
very much.
I probably have it written down.
Yeah, I think you did.
Read
through
that paper.
Okay.
I just think we did.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. Good job.
If you have any questions, call me.
All right, sir.
Well, you got a gun.
Hi, how you doing? I said, thanks for your cards.
I'm good. How are you?
Yes, they do.
You're politicians, huh?
Mr. Mullen exited?
I believe he might be outside smoking a cigarette.
Thank goodness for nicotine.
Give a
corner,
he did a good job.
Yeah, it was right up the street. You're welcome.
You didn't.
Well, nice meeting you. I'm just here. Miss Evans.
Well, I may be not coming back next year. I'm telling you right now. Depending on when this election is, I'm in.
Well, that's what we're all doing.
I'm serious when I say that. Yeah, but I mean, to not get paid. I mean, I make good money at my job. Okay? I'm a plant manager. Okay, and I don't make pennies. Okay. And to give up that community service, and that's what I do. Meet a lot of the citizens, get together with you folks, because I like working with you.
Right.
And I mean, that's what it's about. It's not about.
Quick question: what these non-immigrant people should do with the package that they receive, the package of the absentee ballot? They receive that one based on this, of course.
What I would do is bring it back into the town.
Bring it back to the town.
And talk to the town manager.
Yeah, yeah, it's understand that, you know, now that they are not U.S. citizens, they cannot vote.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yes. And have their name stricken from the.
In that way, that eliminates, make your list shorter.
Yes. Right, absolutely.
And your help is greatly appreciated.
And I do thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for allowing me.
And let me apologize for cutting you off like that. But I do thank you very much, okay?
I appreciate it. If I can do anything to help you, please.
And help the people.
Absolutely. They wanted to be part of this. I was under the impression, everybody under the impression that locally you can vote. And even the way they do, I read this one for me, at the bottom of this says that, you know, it is okay. So that's assumed that you can vote here, but not for those two.
I would assume that too.
Yeah, we all would have.
It's fine. I think this needs to be
revised.
Yes, it does, very much so.
I'll have, I'll call some of those immigrants.
Thank you.
Bring the package back. Thank you so much.
Thanks for making
it. Fun.
Are you
good
to go?
Thank you.
You would have
it's a hard.
Yes.
It's a hard case.
Yes, it's hard to deal with.
I just want to make sure everybody gets a fair and equal shot.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
You're quite welcome.